from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim, in for Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, we talk with Californians who tested positive for COVID-19 about their experience dealing with the infection. The state is nearing 10,000 confirmed cases. We'll hear about their initial symptoms, their time in isolation, and trying to get a test, and how the experience has changed them. We'll also talk with a doctor who treated the first patient admitted with the virus at Stanford. Join us after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim, sitting in for Michael Krasny, who'll be back Monday. In this hour, we hear from people who contracted the coronavirus and a doctor who treats COVID-19 patients at Stanford. We'll learn about what it was like battling the illness, the experience of getting tested and being in quarantine, and what advice they have for us when so many questions about the virus still remain unanswered. Joining us is Lale Garabagian. She's medical director of the emergency department at Stanford University Healthcare. Welcome to the program, Lale Garabagian.
Thanks for having me. It's good to meet you.
Good to meet you as well over the airwaves. And also Leticia Gomez is with us. She's a San Francisco resident who has recovered from COVID-19. Thanks for joining us, Leticia Gomez.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me.
So, Leticia, I'd like to start at the beginning. When did you first notice that you weren't feeling very well? What were your initial symptoms like?
It was in the evening of March 13th, Friday the 13th. I felt chills late that afternoon, kind of goosebumps coming and going. And then when I got home, I took my temperature and I had a 100.6 fever. But until I got those chills, pretty much when I was ready to come back from work, I hadn't noticed anything that really called my attention.
And so did you call your doctor, or when did you start to think that this was something maybe more serious than a cold? Because the fever initially sounds like it was relatively low.
Well, just when I kind of paired the fever with the chills that I had felt and I had read some things, that's when I called the doctor. I called immediately, and I was directed to a Kaiser nurse who, you know, I described my symptoms. She told me to drink plenty of fluids, get lots of rest, isolate, which I had already done anyway. And she booked me an appointment with a doctor the following day over the phone as well. And it wasn't until Saturday, March 14th, when I talked to the doctor, they deemed necessary to test me, but I did have to wait until Monday to get tested. But the symptoms were really mild, nothing that I hadn't felt before. I did develop a cough on Friday afternoon as well. It was a dry cough. Usually I have phlegm when I get a cold, but this was completely dry. And just the body ache that I was feeling that evening, even though I didn't have a very high fever, concerned me. But again, it was kind of masked like a regular cold. I couldn't quite tell. I think my symptoms were on the mild side, and therefore they were difficult to equate with COVID-19, or since we don't really know much about the illness yet, or we're finding out day by day, it was difficult to put two and two together unless you're tested. And I think that happens to a lot of people, perhaps.
Yes, and it's interesting that you felt these symptoms on the 13th of March, because at that time it was so hard to get a test, but it sounds like it was a relatively easy experience for you to get tested.
It was. On Saturday, they determined that I would be tested. They did request that if I could wait until Monday to get the test done. The reason being is they only tested on weekends at the emergency room, and I didn't have any shortness of breath. I did feel a bit of pressure on my chest, but I wasn't sure what it was, and I didn't want to get all hyped up. So I guess I did get a little scared. What if this gets worse and I didn't get tested on time? But at the same time, I didn't want to go to the emergency room unless I absolutely needed to, because I know they're really, really, you know, there's a surge of patients and I don't want to be there if I don't absolutely have to be there. So I waited until Monday and they tested me. But the part that killed me is that even though I got the test on Monday, the results didn't come until 5 to 7 days later. So in my case, it was 7 full days since the day I was tested. And that part killed me because I did start to feel better. I had, you know, down moments and then a bit better. I would feel sick again. But overall, I thought I was getting better, and I was telling myself, why am I isolated in my bedroom for 9 days without knowing if I'm positive? That's the part that killed me, you know, the hardest. To be honest with you, there was a point when I told my family, you know, on Sunday, because the doctors said that they might take even till early next week, which would have been past the 7 days they said to give my results. And I reached out to my family. I said, you know, I'm desperate inside my bedroom. It's kind of crazy making being here all the time, having breakfast, lunch, dinner, everything here, working from here. And I said, my social consciousness comes to an end on Sunday, whether they give me the results or not. And luckily I got the results on Sunday. I would have stayed anyway. I knew I just needed to vent, but it was despairing. You know, you just despair, you want to get out, and you don't really know if you have the virus or not. So I stayed out of an abundance of caution. But most people, I don't know if they would have had the discipline, or many people, not most, to really follow the rules of what you have to do, how you have to isolate yourself, because you don't know for days and days whether you had it. And if in my case, for example, the symptoms were going away, they weren't so strong, so why am I doing this? I started questioning it. And I did it, yes, you know, to protect the community. But it became pretty hard to participate in the way that I had to.
It's good, Leticia, to get a sense of what to be prepared for and how the isolation part was the hardest part emotionally for you, especially if long waits are still the norm, which I have to ask you, Lale Garabagian, are they still the norm? I mean, we had heard a week ago that it was still taking 9 days in some cases for results, and just hearing how emotionally harrowing that can be in Leticia's case, that has improved or no?
It's an excellent question, and Leticia, I'm so glad you're feeling better, and I completely understand your frustration. Thankfully, so much is going on 24/7. The scientists are working around the clock. Lab personnel are working around the clock. A lot more testing sites have become available in just these last 2 weeks. The machine itself has a better capacity to have more testing capability, and it has improved. Now, there are various areas that might have different turnaround times for when you get the results back. There are some that are within a day, within 24 hours, or even less than that. And then there are others that might be a couple more days, depending on its capacity and the amount of testing that has been ordered for them to process in that given day. So it has improved. It is incredibly frustrating for patients who are waiting. The unknown, I think, can really cause quite a bit of angst and anxiety, especially having to socially isolate. And I want to thank you, Leticia, for doing that, especially because your test came back positive. And the symptoms that she describes, 80 to 85% of patients will have these mild to moderate symptoms. However, they can be contagious. And we don't want it to go to someone who is at high risk in order for them to then get more sick.
Hmm. Leticia, let me ask you, after those 9 days, when you got the positive result, what went through your mind? I mean, I almost wonder if it was a relief at least to know.
Absolutely. Not only a relief, I was like, well, I did it right. I helped the community and my family. And second, I realized more than half my quarantine is over, so I kind of saw the light at the end of the tunnel. That felt good because I felt like I have this in the bag. We were pretty much done. But I want to point out, I was really lucky to be able to do this. It wasn't just willpower and community awareness and social consciousness. It was having a structure in place that allowed me to isolate myself. My husband, who was also quarantined in the apartment with me, remained indoors all the time, except to walk the dog because our dog walkers couldn't come. But, you know, he never interacted with anyone. He just took the dog out for a pee and came back. But he fed me breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We had neighbors in our apartment building that brought us food, groceries, anything we needed. There was a structure of people who were willing to help, even though, you know, everybody was a bit scared because there was a COVID-19 positive person in the building, but everyone stepped up and that allowed us to self-isolate. So it's not just the people like myself and the direct family, it's the whole community that needs to help. And like you mentioned, like the doctor mentioned, if I had stepped out, I could have gotten so many other people sick without even knowing. And yeah, it's very important to participate in this. It is hard. It's difficult for everyone to remain indoors if on top of that you have to remain in your bedroom. And yeah, it's tough. Luckily, we have a big enough apartment. My husband was in a separate bedroom and separate bathroom at all times. I don't even know if he got it. The doctor from Kaiser who reached out to me initially said, well, if your husband lives with you, it's too late for him, quote unquote, meaning he's got it too. He never, ever developed symptoms. He was asymptomatic throughout the 14 days that we were both quarantined. So, yeah, maybe he was contagious, but never, ever had symptoms himself. And on the other hand, the people from the San Francisco Public Health Department, when they called to check up on us, I asked them about my husband because he was never tested since he didn't have symptoms and there aren't enough tests. And they said, well, if he did not develop symptoms, he did not catch the virus. I'm like, whoa. So it's two different messages. We will never really know if Juan Carlos got COVID-19, well, coronavirus, or not. And, you know, so we both isolated ourselves, separate from each other. But it's difficult because you don't really know who has it and who doesn't. Because
yes, the unknowns.
Many people are asymptomatic.
The unknowns are really what can cause a lot of anxiety. We're joined now by Candace Palmerly. She's a Walnut Creek resident who is also recovering from COVID-19. Candace Palmerly, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And your experience, as I understand it, is quite different from Leticia's in that your symptoms were more severe and it was much harder for you to get a test.
Yeah, you know, the first week of my symptoms were, I would say, mild. And I was concerned, certainly, because I'm very high risk because of an autoimmune disease. And I did try to get a test, you know, a few of the first days and just sort of gave up. But by about the fifth day, I was feeling worse. And so called my rheumatologist, who's more familiar with, you know, my risk factors. And he did want me to get a test and connected me to the Stanford Medical Express Clinic, I think it's called, who, you know, they gave me a screening first, and then a nurse practitioner did a telemedicine visit, and then she decided that I should get a test. And around the time that I got the test was, you know, it was day six, and I was starting to feel worse. I've heard a lot of people say in the second week symptoms got worse for them, and for me that was definitely the case. The first week there were times where I thought I was done with it, you know, that it was gone, and then it would, you know, come back. But again, I got the test, and it was a couple of days before I learned that it was positive, and by that point I was really feeling worse.
And when you say feeling worse, what were you experiencing?
I was starting to have chest pain, and I was definitely having the shortness of breath. And you know, when they called me with a positive result, it was a shock because my family had all been sick before me and I had spoken with my kids' doctors each and also with my wife's doctor. And, you know, they had all really reassured me that it did not sound like COVID-19, that, you know, we couldn't get a test and that we didn't need a test, and so I was really expecting the results to be negative. The fact that I was having shortness of breath and chest pain, I thought was a flare of my autoimmune disease, which can come with those symptoms. So it was a shock to learn that it was positive after being so reassured by everyone that, you know, we probably did not have it.
So then do you believe that your wife and kids also did have it?
I think they did, yeah. You know, it's possible that there was also a cold going through the house at the same time. And I say that because, you know, they do a full panel at the clinic that I went to, and I think they're doing this at many other clinics, where they check for seasonal colds and influenza A and B. And so I got the first part of my results back 24 hours after I did the swab, and it said I had a seasonal cold, and it said that the COVID-19 results were still pending. So that was the other reason it was a shock, because I thought, oh, huh, okay, I have a cold. But then 24 hours later, they called and they said, your COVID-19 results are also positive. So, you know, there may have been a few things going through the house that confused things.
And my understanding is that, I mean, you have always, because of your autoimmune disease, you've always actually been very careful in terms of, you know, hygiene, touching doorknobs, things like that, right? Those are just your everyday habits, and you still got it.
Right, exactly. I mean, it was sort of a cruel irony because we had already decided as a family to self-isolate. Of course, the kids, you know, still at this point, schools were still in session. But I was, you know, not going to work at this point. And we were sleeping separately. My wife and I were sleeping separately when she caught what we thought was a cold, just because even when she catches a simple cold, we know it can be complicated for me. So I already kind of live in a hypervigilant state when it comes to germs.
So it sounds like you don't know where you got it from.
We don't. I think ours was a case of true community spread. And at the point that we caught it, they were saying there was no community spread yet, but there clearly was.
And Leticia Gomez, you as well don't know where you got it from, right? You didn't have any contact with a known person.
No, not that I'm aware of. And, you know, I did hang around lots of people because of the nature of my work, but we were all careful, using hand sanitizer, keeping our distance from each other. You know, I guess when I got it, it was before we were told to keep 6 feet apart from people. We were just limiting at that point how many people could gather at one time, but we were not so emphatic on keep distance, physical distance from everyone else. But no, I will never know where I got it from.
And Dr. Lale Garabagian, Candace was talking about how her initial week of symptoms was so mild that there were times when she thought she was better. And then her second week was very different. Can you give us a sense of the trajectory of this illness? We hear that there's this time when it could really go in one or two directions, that you could have relatively mild symptoms and then suddenly have very severe symptoms or quote, crash.
It's an excellent question. And I'm also so happy that Candace sought medical care and guidance. And I'm happy to hear that Stanford Express Care was able to screen and test her so that she knows of what viruses that had tested positive for her, so then she could appropriately isolate. Now, the symptoms can vary. Like I said, about 80 to 85% will have mild to moderate symptoms. Another 10% more severe, half of that will then need critical care. And sadly, half of those will die of this virus. Now, Candace is in a population that is at risk because she has an autoimmune disease, and especially those who are taking immunosuppressant medications. They are at risk for having the virus impact their bodies a lot more strongly, which is why we do a very conservative approach in how we manage patients and how we guide their care. Even mild symptoms can turn very quickly into very severe symptoms for patients whose immune systems are suppressed. And it may be where your body is able to fight for several days, and then the impact of the virus then overtakes their body and they start to feel worse. And, you know, that's why emergency medicine exists. That's why the emergency department is open 24/7, because things can change at any time. And we absolutely always advise people to seek care if they're feeling worse at any time.
So, but when should they go to the hospital? What do you recommend?
Well, if they have mild to moderate symptoms, I think important to self-isolate, hydrate, eat, give your body energy, take fever-reducing medications. However, if you, like Candace, have an autoimmune disease or are on immunosuppressive medications and you start to develop even mild symptoms, you should contact your doctor for guidance.
Right. I'm more curious about when someone should actually check into the hospital, say, or drive to the emergency room or get driven to the emergency room.
Your question is, when should they come to the emergency department?
Yes. At what point should they not wait anymore and just go in?
You know, simply speaking, if you feel bad, come to the emergency department and allow us to check you out.
And again, Dr. Lale Garabagian is a medical director of the emergency department at Stanford University Healthcare. We're also talking with Leticia Gomez, a San Francisco resident who has recovered, and Candace Palmerly, a Walnut Creek resident who is also recovering. Candace Palmerly, once you got that diagnosis, you said you were shocked. Were you scared? Were there thoughts that you had about, I don't know, if you felt like you were confronting new questions about your own mortality or your family?
Yeah. I did feel scared when they gave me the diagnosis, because I didn't know if the worst was still ahead of me, or, you know, if I was on a recovery trajectory. So there was a big unknown, and I really worked to try to control the fear, because I felt like that would only make me worse. And it did get, you know, worse at that point, forward. And, there was one night when, you know, I went to the ER, and that was, you know, to address the question that you were just asking about when to go, I really had that question myself, because I was having shortness of breath, but I wasn't sure that it was time yet to go. And my doctors gave me the directive to go when I was feeling winded doing simple tasks. So when that happened was when I went in.
And Leticia, in your case, getting the test itself was one of the most physically painful parts of this, it sounded like.
It was painful. First, they put a swab all the way in the back of your throat, and that was okay, just tickles a bit. But then they put it up your nose. I heard an artist say, all the way up to your thoughts. That part was really painful. And it, you know, lasted a good 10 seconds. And I remember I was screaming. I'm like, ah! And I thought that it was because the worker was afraid of being exposed to me. So she just kind of like, you know, yanked it up in my nose. But no, I talked to other people who were tested, and they had the same experience. So it is part of the testing process.
We're talking with Leticia Gomez, a San Francisco resident who's recovered, Candace Pomerley, a Walnut Creek resident who has also recovered. And we're hearing first-person stories of people who've contracted coronavirus. After the break, we'll meet a man who is from Southern California who actually contracted coronavirus very early on that infamous Diamond Princess cruise that was docked off the coast of Japan for weeks. We'd like to invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. Have you tested positive for COVID-19? Do you have a personal experience related to COVID-19 or know somebody who has gone through this and would like to share your story? What questions do you have for people who have had the virus or for the doctor who is treating people now with it? The number to call is 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or you can email your questions to forum@kqed.org. And in terms of the status of testing, Dr. Garabagian, you're saying that there's been so much improvement in that in terms of the wait times. Has there also been a lot of improvement in trying to administer them very quickly to more people, as opposed to having them meet some very strict measures? And we just have about 30 seconds before the break.
Thankfully, things are changing every week. The capacity of testing is allowing expanded testing, and we currently only are still testing the symptomatic patients, however mild or severe those symptoms are. And that has been quite broadened compared to earlier this month.
Thank you, and we'll have more Forum after the break. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're hearing first-person stories of people who have contracted coronavirus and talking with the physician who treats people with the illness. We're talking with Lale Garabagian, medical director of the emergency department at Stanford University, Leticia Gomez, a San Francisco resident who has recovered, and Candace Pomerley, a Walnut Creek resident who is also recovering. And we want to hear from you. We want to know if you've tested positive and want to share your story, or what questions you have for people who have had the virus or for the doctor who treats them. You can call us at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook at KQED Forum, or email your questions to forum@kqed.org. And I go now to Carl Goldman. He's a Santa Clarita resident who contracted the coronavirus while on a cruise ship in January. Thanks for joining us, Carl.
Of course. Great to be here, and great to be talking now from my house in Santa Clarita after 56 days of quarantine.
Yes, that is an incredibly long time. And so just to backtrack a little bit, you had gone on a cruise, left on January 17th, as I understand it, which was quite early in all of this. So I'm guessing at that time, coronavirus was just sort of in the background for you.
Right. It wasn't even in the background. You had to really dig deep down into Google to find it. Japan, at that point, China was suppressing most of that information. When we got to Japan, to Tokyo, though, the first day before we went on the ship, I noticed about a third of the people in the streets were wearing masks. And I, you know, then the little light bulb went off in my forehead and said, oh, wow, it must be Corona because they're so close to China. And they were being much more proactive, and it was much more in the news in Japan than it was back in the States at the time.
And so this, what you thought was going to be basically a little more than a two-week cruise, turned into 30 days on the boat because of the quarantine that you were placed under once it became clear that there was the virus on the boat itself. But then tell us what happened. When you were able to get off the boat, sounds like you were greeted by a pretty unusual scene.
Right. Well, the State Department flew two 747 cargo planes into Tokyo to pick up what at that time was reduced down to 300 Americans. There were already 40 in Japanese hospitals, including our close friend Jerry Jorgensen, who had come down with the virus. So we were in constant touch with her in the hospital. When we boarded the planes, which was about a 6.5-hour ordeal, we were sitting on buses and with no bathrooms. So that was a challenge. We finally got on the plane. They had quarantined off an area on there. And I went to sleep once we took off. We were sitting in regular seats that they had set up, but it was a cargo plane. There were no stewardesses. All there were was three personnel in hazmat suits. One happened to be an Air Force doctor, and his medical team were there. 2 hours into the flight, I woke up with a very high fever of over 103. The doctor then put me in a quarantine area on the plane where there were already eight others, and we flew on to Travis Air Force Base in outside of Sacramento. When we landed at Travis, I had slept the whole way, and unlike for me, the symptoms were pretty mild because other than the fever, and I started to get a dry cough that lasted about 2.5 weeks. Other than that, I didn't have a sore throat, didn't have a headache, didn't have runny nose, no sneezing, no sniffling. My body did not ache. And even with that high a fever, usually I would get a combination of chills and then the sweats. There was none of that. So I woke up when we landed at Travis. More folks in hazmat suits came on board the plane. They assessed everything, decided to take all the passengers off the plane except for three of us who were in the quarantined area and three of our spouses. So the six of us then remained on the plane. We flew to Omaha. When we landed in Omaha, it was a scene like out of a movie with all kinds of first responders out there, other security, the media. I was put on a stretcher and put into an ambulance and taken to a biocontainment area over at Nebraska Medicine in Omaha. My wife and the other passengers, the other five, were taken to a lower level of care on the same campus, but about three blocks away.
So you say you were in all 56 days now how many days were you actually in quarantine? And then after that, you live in California, so you've also been sheltering at home. So is it safe to say that you've basically since January or halfway through your cruise in January, basically been in some form of isolation?
Yeah, so I've been in isolation since February 4th when we first learned that the passenger on the Diamond Princess who had gotten off at Hong Kong, who we call Ground Zero, when he got off the plane, 4 days later we found out he had the coronavirus. That's when they did a one-day quarantine on us. And then Japanese health officials assessed the situation, realized that there were probably others with the virus based on temperature reads. Lab tests were sent to Tokyo. And that's when the next morning we were then told we were going to be quarantined in our cabin for 14
but
days.
I guess
so I got to spend Valentine's Day in our cabin.
Yeah. What I'm so struck by is, I mean, how did you handle or how have you handled being in isolation for so long?
Yeah, the isolation, it varied each time. Now, on board the Diamond Princess, we had our two close friends in the cabin next door, and we're able to go back and forth through a door that was unlocked out on our balcony. So that's what saved, I think, both of our marriages, is that we had the contact with all four of us.
Yes.
After 29 years of marriage, I think if my wife and I were alone in the cabin together, that by a few days into it, even with Valentine's Day in the middle, that would have been a challenge. When I got to Omaha, it was inside that biocontainment area. And it's interesting, right after 9/11, there was an anthrax scare and all across the country, and actually in Britain as well. But with the anthrax scare, the CDC, along with the Fed, set up three biocontainment areas, one in the middle of the country in Omaha, one in Atlanta, and one in New York. They never were able to use it for anthrax, but 15 years later used it for the first time for the Ebola breakout. And then again, I was number two when they used it. And it said it was like a scene out of a movie. I was in that biocontainment for 10 days in total isolation. I celebrated my 67th birthday alone in there. There were two cameras on me at all times, double pane glass with chicken wire in between to protect anything from possibly escaping. The door also was sealed, and no one entered my room without wearing a full hazmat suit, kind of like Neil Armstrong when he landed on the moon, because it had the motor attached to the back as well to allow filtration in there. Three layers of gloves. They would come in every 4 hours, bringing me food, doing some more vitals that were beyond what I was already hooked up to, and also just seeing if I had any other needs. The cameras the cameras that were on me led back to Central Command, so I could talk back and forth via the cameras. So there was
what a unique and incredibly labor-intensive experience. I want to get some calls in, and I'm going to start moving to Margaret in Menlo Park. Hi, Margaret. Let us know what you have.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for this program. I am 74 years old, so I'm in the risk group. Plus, I do have ulcerative colitis and diabetes. They're all under control, but I have extenuating circumstances. The beginning of March, I had unusual symptoms that included extreme fatigue, a very low temperature. My temperature normally runs really low, but it was around 99. But I was experiencing alternate chills and alternate being really hot. And I did have a slight cough. What I had that was pronounced, I still have my tonsils. I had an extreme sore throat, almost like strep throat, and I had very big swollen glands. Because of the unusual symptoms, I called my doctor but was unable to be tested. Because I'm a senior, I would love to get an antibody test. Is there any way, given my circumstances and my my age and also my other conditions, that I could get an antibody test? Mm-hmm. It would really help me to know if I'm at risk or if I have some type of immunity. Thank you for taking my question.
Well, thanks, Margaret. Garibagian.
Wonderful question, and I'm glad you're feeling well and healthy now. It's an interesting question about testing for immunity. It's something that I know there are studies that are going on regarding whether a patient is immune and how long that immunity may last. There's no indication that there is lasting immunity when you have potentially had coronavirus. It's still to be determined. And I think there's more to come when it comes to whether we are testing immunity and whether we are using those cells from those who have had it in order to treat others who are currently having it in order to improve their treatment plan for it as well. There's an immense amount and outstanding research going on, and hopefully we'll know more soon.
Leticia Gomez, I understand that you are helping other members of your community, in particular a mother who is in quarantine right now waiting for test results. I mean, do you feel, what have you been told in terms of whether or not you could get it again or whether or not you could pass it on or anything like that, even now that you've sort of recovered?
Yeah, well, I'm a bit scared. I want to help others. Let me first say real quick, Amina, Carl's story is incredible, and my isolation compared to his was like spending 2 weeks at Buckingham Palace. I'm sorry, Carl, everything you went through, wow. In terms of helping others, you know, this person reached out via Nextdoor looking for someone to help her with her two toddlers. They're 3 and 6, in case she needs to go to the ER. And, you know, she does have chest pain, shortness of breath. She's scared. She's very scared. And it really helps her to talk to somebody who had it and recovered. So, you know, we take her food. We prepare a homemade meal, and I take it to her front door. Can I get it again? I don't know. There are so many unknowns. But for now, I'm pretty much the safest person, I think, to be able to help her and her children should she need me to step up to the plate to that level. So I think just giving people reassurance that you're there to help them, and I will help. I will step up to the plate if she needs it. Can I get reinfected? I don't know. I'm hoping that I have some immunity. I'm hoping my husband has immunity too. We don't know, but we do need to help each other. I think there is a lot of anxiety going on, and if we can provide support, that might ease some of the symptoms that people are feeling, you know, the chest pain, it can be anxiety as well.
Hmm. Well, let me go to Billy in San Francisco. Hi, Billy, join us. Hi, Billy.
The questions that I had. Hello?
Hi, go right ahead, Billy. Sorry, we missed the beginning of your call.
Oh, sorry. thanks for taking my call. And you actually just... the doctors sort of answered my question about immunity. I am in San Francisco. I'm home with my husband and our 4 kids. And we have, my parents live down in Morgan Hill, and we're staying away from them for the time being. None of us are sick. But my question was, say we did get sick, how long would it be before we could see people? I mean, it's sort of a moot point because of shelter in place. But
well, it's an interesting question, though, Dr. Garabagian, because I'm assuming the way you find out if people have, quote, recovered is after one negative test, two negative tests? I mean, how is that determined?
It's a great question. And actually, the CDC just came out with brand new guidelines. And currently, what we are using is if you are 14 days from your positive test or 7 days since the resolution of your symptoms, whichever one is longer, then it is thought that you likely have been fully recovered. And however, social distancing is still very, very important. We don't know if you can get it again. And it's important to ensure that social distancing maintains. The early signs are that it is working in this area, which we are very optimistic. And it's how the community helps each other. At this point, I would recommend still social distancing, despite potentially being recovered from COVID-19, using things like FaceTime or any other kind of video conferencing to communicate and check in with family members, and don't have that be any kind of reassurance because it might be a false reassurance. And it's unfortunate because we don't know everything about this virus yet. So until that time, we would recommend the same measures. Now, the CDC's new guidelines says the same thing, however, potentially testing negative twice in order to go back to work, which is different than socializing. They don't state anything about social distancing and having that be something that you are okay then to do, which that would be incorrect. But if you are an essential worker and you need to return to work, then there are guidelines regarding that.
Well, Terry writes, did any of the folks lose their sense of taste or smell? And if so, was it early, before symptoms?
Mina, I did. This is Leticia.
When did you lose your sense of taste or smell? And was it really noticeable to you, Leticia?
Absolutely. Let's see. I've noticed that I was sick on Friday the 13th, but on Wednesday, the 11th, the toothpaste tasted horrible, as in whatever flavors they put to mask whatever ingredient is there to clean your mouth. Those flavors I could not taste, and I only tested something that was chemical and really bad. And then I realized a couple of days later My husband made me a chicken soup, and he put a little too much spice in it, and I don't eat spicy food at all. And when he brought it to me on Friday the 13th at night, he asked me, how is it, out of concern that I would be, you know. And I said, it's really bland. And the other thing, just a few days later, you know, I took a shower, and I put on some perfume, and I could not smell it. And I put my wrist up to my nose, and I did not smell my perfume at all. And I sprayed a lot of it on. I smelled directly from the bottle, no smell at all. I was really worried. I did not know at the time that was a sign of COVID-19. But since I have a brain tumor, I thought, oh, my God, my tumor is growing, and it's, you know, affecting another area of my brain or another. It was really nerve-wracking for me. But I did lose my sense of smell and taste. And I still, I'm recovering it. I'm still eating spicy food. My husband is loving it because I don't usually. And I still don't find it spicy.
Hmm. Do you still have any, I have here that you're recovering, Candace. So do you still have some symptoms or feel a little bit ill?
Yeah. So I feel like my lungs are still recovering. You know, I'm going out for short walks every day, and I don't have the same lung capacity that I did before. I feel like it's improving, but it's improving very, very slowly. So, you know, each day I try to go a little bit longer, and I just still have a lot of shortness of breath. Now, again, my autoimmune disease affects my lungs, and so I have a little bit of a double whammy there. And I don't fully know how much I will recover, so if this will be something that is long-term for me, or if I can get back to where I was before COVID-19. I'm really hoping I can get back to where I was. At some point I'll have to have a CT scan to check in on my lungs, and I, you know, it'll be interesting to see if there are changes.
Carl, do you feel fully recovered?
Yes, I'm fully recovered. I had a precondition of Guillain-Barré syndrome, and so that is still prevalent. They were not able to treat that while I had the coronavirus. So now the doctors are beginning to look into that to determine the best treatment. But as far as corona is concerned, the virus, I'm fully recovered. But it took me 29 days from between the start of the virus until I had my two negative tests. So I was one of the longer ones. It's not unusual, but it's rare for people to go that long. I think the longest on record right now is in China at 37 days.
So you had a very long illness. You had a very dramatic experience with this. You have been in isolation for a really long time. I mean, what new perspectives has this experience given you, Carl?
You know, I've written a journal about it on our, we own the local radio station in Santa Clarita, California, and on hometownstation.com, our website, I've been writing a regular journal on it. And I realized early on, my wife, who was with us the whole time, she never got the virus. She was able to leave about 2.5 weeks before I did from her isolation in Omaha, separate quarantine, and she came back to Santa Clarita. And I realized when she got back, she was handling all of my chores at the house along with her chores, which included the one lowest on my list, and that's cleaning up the dog poop. And I realized in my isolation in Omaha, I actually missed cleaning up the dog poop and being able to step outside, touch the outside air, because I wasn't even able to open a window for many, many weeks.
And Carl Goldman is a Santa Clarita resident. Candace Pomerley is a Walnut Creek resident. Leticia, a San Francisco resident, all recovered from COVID-19, and we're so glad. Also, Dr. Lale Garabagian, medical director of the emergency department at Stanford University Healthcare, is with us, and so are you, our listeners, at 866-733-6786 if you want to call and join, or on Twitter and Facebook at KQED Forum. You can also email us at forum@kqed.org. And I go next to Jay in San Jose. Hi, Jay.
Hi. I have a question regarding fever-reducing drugs. I heard that recommendation, if you get a fever, take some. But would you please address the controversy regarding ibuprofen? I see some places say, no, that makes it worse. And others say, oh, that's an urban legend.
Dr. Lale Garabagian, ibuprofen.
It's an excellent question, and I'm glad you brought it up. There isn't enough data, nor are there studies to show that non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medications like ibuprofen have a detrimental impact to a person who has COVID-19. I've seen the same reports as you have, and I've read it, of course, with interest. I've tried to gather some expert opinion on this, and they all have mentioned that there's not enough data to show that ibuprofen has a deleterious effect. So at this point, we are not recommending to avoid it, and that so far from the information known right now, Tylenol, ibuprofen, or other fever-reducing agents seem to be safe.
Well, Kim writes, I'm pretty sure I had the virus early in February. I had a high fever, dry cough, and had a hard time breathing. It felt as if a vice was squeezing my chest. Luckily, I had my asthma medication, and it helped the breathing. I was really sick for about a week and quite tired for a couple more weeks. My doctor and others have said that the virus was probably around 4 months. Is that possible? Dr. Lale Garabagian?
It is possible that this person had COVID-19. The most common symptoms are fever or cough or feeling short of breath. We also understand that there are some gastrointestinal symptoms like diarrhea, where there may be fecal-oral transmission, according to the studies now as well. However, having it be around 4 months, the virus does not last outside of the body for, depending on the surface, longer than a few days, sometimes only a few hours, and only a few hours in the air. So I think that it is possible that this person may have had COVID-19. Also possible that they could have had any other type of viral illness. What we're seeing at Stanford is of all the people that we have tested, and since March 13th, we have a broader criteria for testing of symptomatic patients that involves physician discretion, where we're seeing about 90% of people do not have COVID-19 who are symptomatic, and about 8 to 10% are positive for COVID-19. So this so far is being controlled. However, we are seeing people who are young. We're seeing people who are at high risk, and I'm glad they're seeking care.
Well, Richard writes, my elderly mother has flu symptoms, but we have been told that it would take a week to get results. But more importantly, she can't afford to go to the doctor's office and risk infection or infecting someone else. She can't drive herself. I can't afford to take her to the doctor because my wife is in a high-risk group, cancer survivor, pneumonia history. What are the options for testing? There's been talk about home testing and making that more accessible. I mean, what are options for someone in Richard's mother's situation?
It's a good question. First of all, if she is feeling bad, she can call 911 and have the our wonderful EMS personnel who are truly right in the front lines come to any emergency department for us to evaluate and to test. So that's always a possibility. Now, as far as home testing, that is something that is an absolute possibility and possibly in the near future. There are scientists, researchers, those that are in our emergency department as well, who are seeing if people do their own swabbing, is that as sensitive in the results as when a healthcare worker does it? And plenty of other studies going along those lines to potentially result in a home testing kit to be ultimately available. So it is a possibility in the future, but not now currently.
Well, let me see if I can get Craig in Menlo Park in. Hi, Craig.
Hi, I have a question about data. So many of the questions people have are unanswered yet. I'm just wondering, what do we know about studies, and have the early survivors of corona been exposed to any studies? Do we have any personal experiences with studies they might have been involved in?
Thanks. Leticia, Candace, or Carl, have you been asked to be involved in any studies now that you've recovered?
Yeah, I have, yes.
Candace Palmerly, you have as well?
And yeah. I have. I've been asked to donate plasma.
Ah, and do you think you will do that?
I'm going to check with my doctor, and if she gives me a green light tomorrow, I will. Absolutely.
Yes, I mean, when you have underlying conditions, you have to, all these decisions are very difficult to make. And Candace, quickly, what have you been asked to do?
Two things, actually. Stanford sent me a letter asking if they could use the results of my nasal swab to be a part of one of their studies, so it would require nothing from me. which I gave permission for. And then also there's a biotech firm in San Francisco that's developing a monoclonal antibody to treat COVID-19. And I was in touch with them, and I actually didn't qualify for that study because of my medications, but my wife did. So she'll be donating blood to their study for the monoclonal antibody treatment.
Well, Candace Palmerly, Leticia Gomez, Carl Goldman, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your experiences. We really appreciate it. And Dr. Alala Garabagian, also really appreciate having you on as well. I just want to ask you if there's just quickly one thing that you want to say that you have learned from this experience. I know, Carl, you already shared just how much you missed your freedom and how important that is and the little things in life. But Candace Palmerly, I'll start with you quickly.
Oh, gosh, I feel like there have been so many learnings from all of this. But I think the big takeaway is more of a cultural one with illness and our response to it. You know, people tend to encourage working through being sick, going out into the world, regardless of whether you have a virus or not. And, you know, we fortunately responded really conservatively in our family. Yes. and kept people home. But, you know, even the message from work and from doctors was, don't worry, you know, just stay home while you're symptomatic. I'm sure it's nothing other than a cold. And I think in general, we need to be more conservative.
Yes. And, hopefully this is bringing in that cultural shift.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you to our listeners and to our guests for listening. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.